Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and you are listening to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another opportunity to have a fantastic conversation about topics that are so relevant for your life, for your health, and your well-being. And as always, it's really an opportunity to get empowered with truthful information. So again, thank you for joining me because I have another fantastic conversation planned for today with a wonderful guest. So I'm just going to jump right into it. Today we're talking about taking control of your genetic destiny. And my guest is Dr. Mitch Gaynor. So Dr. Gaynor is the founder and president of Gaynor Wellness and a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the Weill Cornell Medical College with more than 25 years of experience treating patients. His work has been featured in the New York Times, and he has appeared on many national television programs, including Good Morning America, The Dr. Oz Show, and The Martha Stewart Show. He lives in New York City, and he is excited about releasing his latest book called The Gene Therapy Plan, Taking Control of Your Genetic Destiny with Diet and Lifestyle, a groundbreaking approach to preventing and treating disease by changing the way we eat and behave. And, of course, if you've been listening to my radio shows, you know this is such a favorite topic of mine, understanding our genes, understanding how we can impact our genetic destiny, and it's going to be a wonderful conversation. So, first of all, Dr. Gaynor, welcome to the show today.
Oh, it's great to be back with you, Cheryl.
I know. It's always wonderful having a conversation with you, and congratulations on this new book. It's really exciting, Mitch. I've read it. I love it. I've learned a lot from it, and it inspires me to just keep on getting the information out there about how we can alter our genetic destiny. So let's just begin at the beginning with this conversation so we can help people understand some of the terms we're going to be talking about. And I'd like to start explaining, if you will, the difference between genes and genomes and the whole genomic approach that we're going to be exploring today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we used to think that our genetic destiny was determined by the genes you were born with. But the fact of the matter is, it's not as simple as just your eye color and your hair color. When it comes to, what your weight's going to be, so what we used to think is if we had a lot of overweight people in our family, we were destined to be overweight. We used to think that if we had a family history of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, we were destined to get those, and there really wasn't anything that we could do about it any more than our eye color or our hair color. And, we all literally do have, a crystal ball, so to speak. And what I mean by that, we may not be able to see what our destiny is, but we can largely control the dynamics of our genes. We can't control the genes we're born with, but we can control the dynamics of those genes by what you put in your body. And so, if you put the right things in your body, your future is going to look a lot sunnier and a lot less cloudy. And so what the control of our genes depends on what toxins we're putting in our body. By toxins, I'm referring to pesticide residues, herbicide residues, heavy metals, white sugar, refined flour, heat-damaged vegetable oils, or what good nutrients that you're putting in your body, because these literally turn on and off genes that lead to cancer, obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and premature aging.
So we're going to talk about all those various health concerns as we get into this conversation. But let's explore this concept of epigenetics a little bit more, because I find it so fascinating and so empowering, the way I like to talk about the epigenetic approach, which I think helps people to understand it, is that are the genes that we talk about, our inherited genes, are like the hardware, but we actually have a software component to our genetic makeup, which has, you know, that's part of that leading research that you're writing about, that can, it's like software on our computer. We can alter the software. The mainframe stays the same, but how we write the programs and what kind of information comes up on our programs is part of this aspect of our genes called the epigenome, and we talk about it as epigenetics. Can you explain that a little bit more for people?
Yeah, the analogy that I like to use is that the DNA that we're born with is the gun, but it's the environment that pulls the trigger. And that's why I like the term eco-genetics. Eco refers to the environment that we surround our genes with that determines their expression. So if we're putting a lot of things in our body that are going to promote inflammatory genes, and that occurs on a whole host of levels, starting just with our gut. So the gut microbiome, the bacteria that we have in our gut, there are more genes in those bacteria in your gut than there are in the whole rest of the human body. So your gut microbiome is like a finely tuned ecosystem. It's like a rainforest that has to be taken care of. So if you're going to be putting a lot of acid rain in a rainforest in terms of putting a lot of soda in your body that's loaded with phosphoric acid, you're going to damage that rainforest. You're going to damage the gut microbiome. And when you have the wrong bacteria in your gut, that causes a release of what we call inflammatory mediators or inflammatory chemicals throughout your body that have the effect of causing insulin resistance, which means your body has to make more and more insulin, so your sugar will be low a lot of the time, and that makes you feel hungry for the wrong types of food. It causes leptin insensitivity. Leptin is another hormone that's made by fat cells. It's called the hunger hormone, but that's what's supposed to make you feel full. But if you're leptin insensitive because of too much inflammation, then you're never going to feel full. You're always going to feel hungry. And that's why I talk about in the gene therapy plan that that's why most diets have not worked long term for people, because it leads to nutritional deficiencies, you know, that don't take care of your gut bacteria. They don't take care of the number of fat cells that you have. So you get more and more fat cells if you're not putting things in your body that take care of something called angiogenesis. Angiogenesis is the growth of new blood vessels around fat cells and cancer cells. You need to be putting anti-angiogenic foods in your body all the time. And these include foods like apples. They're loaded with quercetin. You should make your own apple juice. All you need is a blender and then a strainer. It's not like high tech, and it doesn't have any of the added sugar. You can make your own grape juice the same way. Get organic grapes, organic apples, blend them for 20, 30 seconds, pour it through a blender, and you've got the best tasting apple juice or grape juice, or you can mix them. And these are loaded with chemicals that will decrease inflammation, help the bacteria in your gut. And a lot of people think when they hear about these types of recipes, oh, this has got to be expensive. You know, it's easier just to go into a fast food restaurant or buy processed food. This is actually cheaper than the diet that we think is quicker and less expensive, and it's a lot healthier, and it's not going to leave you feeling hungry all the time. We've had a Band-Aid approach to medicine in this country for far too long. By that I mean we wait for a symptom to develop, and then we have a medication for that. symptom. So stomach ulcers are not caused by a deficiency of acid blockers. Headaches are not caused by a deficiency of pain medication. And diets, for the most part, don't work because they're like trying to fix a leaky roof by drilling a deeper hole in your floor. You have to fix the roof if you want to fix the leaky roof. The roof in this case is your DNA and gene expression.
You know, this is so fascinating for me because it really is talking about this growing science that is empowering us because we're learning how we can directly alter our own personal gene expression. And we need to appreciate the fact that food is not just about getting your vitamins and minerals, but this concept that food is information communicating to our genes directly. Can you elaborate a bit more about that?
That's true. And the food, for instance, has to do, let's just take detoxifying enzymes. So there was a study that came out of Johns Hopkins a few years ago that compared women with and without breast cancer. And they looked at the most important detoxifying enzyme called GST. They found women with the lowest levels of that detoxifying enzyme had a fourfold increased risk of developing breast cancer. Well, the three top foods I talk about in the gene therapy plan for increasing detoxifying enzymes are cruciferous vegetables, the broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, and cabbage. They're loaded with sulforaphane that on a genetic level increase the enzymes that get rid of a lot of the environmental toxins. Garlic is contains allicin. It's best if you're using a garlic press to let it sit for 10 minutes before you make a marinade out of it, because that will bring out a lot of the anti-cancer substances, cause them to become activated, that turn on detoxifying enzymes. And then there's turmeric. Turmeric is what gives curry its yellow color. You can go out and buy turmeric root at an Indian market. You can order it online and use that to make a cup of tea. Just put turmeric root in a cup of boiling water for about 2 to 3 minutes. You've got turmeric tea. I have a lot of recipes for turmeric smoothies with different other ingredients that turn on detoxifying enzymes. Or you can buy the turmeric powder. You can use that in smoothies, cook with it. So detoxification is just one thing, but it's important for people to realize the kitchen is the center of every household. It's where we make our food. And while we can't control our external environment, like for instance, the air that we're breathing, we can control our internal environment at the level of our DNA by the foods we put in our body and how we prepare those foods. And that starts in your own kitchen.
So can you just explain how exposure to toxins, pesticides, fertilizers, you know, the air pollution is altering our genes adversely?
Well, there was a great new study that was just published in the last couple of weeks that looked at men who ate the highest concentration of high pesticide produce. And what they found was men eating the highest produce that had the most pesticides, they had an average sperm count of 81 million, whereas men that ate predominantly produce with low pesticide residues like onions and grapefruit, they had an average sperm count of 171 million. So, you know, there are certain things that I tell patients they should only buy organic. And these are the highest pesticide produce, and that would include things like strawberries, bell peppers, grapes, kale and spinach and apples, try and get those organic whenever you can, because they'll have pesticide, herbicide residues that you can't wash off. The rest you can wash off easier with soap and water. But these are called endocrine disruptors. And so, you know, a 50% decrease in a male sperm count from those, that's scary enough. But there was a study that I talk about in the book that they did in male rats using very common pesticide, herbicide residues. And they looked at pregnant mother with the male rat that were exposed to this during pregnancy. The males had very low sperm count, and the males then passed that on to their sons for four generations. Well, we're seeing an epidemic of infertility in this country today and around the world, largely, I believe, because of a lot of these endocrine disruptors in the environment. They also come from plastics as well, and certain things found in certain cosmetics like phthalates. But these endocrine disruptors work at the level of certain gene expression. But, you know, the estrogen, and estrogen is found in men too, the estrogen that the human body makes, it's got a half-life in the body of a few hours. These, like DDT, which ended up being banned, it was known to have effects on developmental disabilities and things like that as far back as 1951. It wasn't banned until 1971 after millions of people had been exposed to it. And that is one of the big problem with these is, you know, they end up having to be proven harmful before they end up being taken off the market. And when we see that epigenetics isn't just about affecting gene expression in a given individual, but also their offspring as well, that it can be passed on, it's pretty scary and makes you want to put the right things in your body.
So, Mitch, is this helping to explain why exposure to toxins, and by the way, I recently came across a statistic that said we have about 14 pounds of ingested toxins on an annual basis in America, which is pretty scary because we can't see it. It's so invisible. But is this the theory now to explain why exposure to toxins, exposure to toxic foods like sugar, to overly processed foods, to all the additives are so deleterious to our health and driving illnesses, because these substances are actually altering us on the genetic, genomic level, driving inflammation, oxidative stress, and a lot of these other underlying imbalances?
Absolutely. And the fact is that it's heritable also. In other words, it can be passed on generation to generation, what you're putting in your body today. We really have to think about that for future generations as well. But the fact of the matter is we're living in a country where one in three people hear the words, you have cancer. That's going to be one in two by the year 2020, 50% of the population. The CDC estimates that 18% of our children have either a learning disability, an emotional disability, or a developmental disability, almost 20% of our children. I do believe that a lot of these have to do with environmental toxicants. And so, like I say, we have control of what we're putting in our body, what we're putting in our children's body. So we certainly want to put in things that are going to help detoxify, decrease inflammation, reverse the effects of a lot of the things that we can't control.
Okay, let's talk about nutrigenomics. So this is another distinction that we need to define for people, because what you're talking about is nutrigenomics. I work with nutrigenomics. I do nutrigenomic testing. So this is a real passion of mine as well as yours. So Let's define nutrigenomics, and we can talk about the influence on certain foods, specifically on genes.
Well, nutrigenomics is a subset of ecogenetics, and it has to do with the nutrients that we put in our body on a good basis that will turn on tumor suppressor genes, that will turn off genes that promote inflammation, that will encourage good bacteria in our gut, also on a genetic level. So these are going to include things like olive oil. So olive oil is very anti-angiogenic against the proliferation of new fat cells. It contains a nutrient called DPE, which inhibits fat cells from growing new blood vessels and spreading. The DPE also decreases inflammation by reducing on a genetic level the two most powerful inflammatory mediators. One's called tumor necrosis factor. The other is an enzyme called COX-2. Olive oil is also loaded with an omega-2 fatty acid. It's only found in two places in nature, in sharks and olives. It's called squalene, and that promotes both fat cell death and cancer cell death. So you can see how powerful nutrigenomics is if you just take something as simple as olive oil.
Yeah, this is so interesting. I'll just briefly share my experience. I was doing a lot of saturated fats and butter. I was following, I guess, basically a paleo approach to things and also adding in some flaxseed oil. I wasn't doing all that much olive oil. And when I got my results back from my nutrigenomic test, I discovered, lo and behold, that I'm the type that thrives on a traditional Mediterranean-type diet, that olive oil is a critical piece for my genes, and that if I focus more on saturated fats or even on the plant-based fats, the omegas from flaxseed oil, it would generate more inflammation in my body, which is exactly what I was seeing when I had blood workup done. So I changed based on this information, which I wouldn't have had, Mitch. How would we know? You know, we were bombarded by all these theories, right? And this let me have an individual approach that absolutely changed the next blood workup I had. Everything came back into normal range, triglycerides, my homocysteine, my cholesterol readings, everything came back in optimal range when I made those adjustments.
That's a great story. The one thing I would point out for your listeners about olive oil, though, is you do denature a lot of the good substances in olive oil if you cook with it. So it's best if you pour it on something that's already been cooked,
right,
like pasta, or if you pour it on something raw.
Yeah, it doesn't have a very high heat tolerance, does it?
No. In fact, it has one of the lowest of any oils. It doesn't really hurt you if you're cooking with it, but you lose all the good benefits, so
yeah,
it's best not to.
Yeah, I like cooking with coconut oil. Do you like that one?
Love it. Coconut oil is my number one, organic coconut oil is my number one cooking oil, because even at high heats, it has a very high smoke point. My second favorite would be cold-pressed grapeseed oil. Third best would just be butter.
Right. Okay, well, let's talk about targeting some disease conditions with this nutrigenomic approach. And in your book, you talk about some of the major chronic illnesses, and we'll add aging to a chronic illness list. So let's talk about that. What have you found, and what advice do you have based on this genomic perspective for helping with obesity?
Well, obesity, it's very important to take control of something called angiogenesis. So angiogenesis is the process whereby fat cells make new blood vessels. The more fat cells you have, it becomes a vicious cycle, whereas the more muscle you have, muscle's probably the best anti-inflammatory you could have. So you want to not just do aerobic exercise. You want to do weight-bearing exercise as well. Build muscle. Muscle is burning more calories when you're just sitting by far than fat cells. And also, the fat cells are constantly releasing inflammatory chemicals throughout your body. So things that inhibit this angiogenesis around fat cells is, let's say, maitake mushroom. Maitake is very anti-angiogenic. It helps you control blood sugar by increasing insulin sensitivity. Shiitake mushroom does the exact same thing. And then a great snack a lot of people don't know about, people like chocolate, you can get the raw cocoa beans or cacao beans. They are loaded with flavanols. That's where dark chocolate comes from, except this doesn't have any added sugar and it doesn't have any of the hydrogenated oils. Loaded with flavonoids, loaded with something called oleic acid, which decreases angiogenesis and it improves insulin sensitivity. Also, the raw cacao has will increase your serotonin levels, and that helps you feel full longer. So those are just two simple things you can do to combat obesity.
So I think the point you're making about the role of muscle mass really needs to be emphasized. While, you know, aerobics are necessary and that needs to be part of an overall exercise program, but it's so critical to build muscle mass. You know, you're reducing inflammation, you're generating greater metabolism, you're improving your energy capacity, and you know, it's a critical sign. Loss of muscle mass is a critical sign of aging.
It sure is, and it's a critical sign that you're going to get diabetes and heart disease. And it also, the more muscle mass you have, that's been found to decrease belly fat or visceral fat, which is your worst risk factor for heart disease.
Well, I just want to say again, you know, kind of sharing some of my deep, dark secrets, that I used to have really low tone, and for a variety of reasons, I think a lot of it was stress that kind of disintegrated my muscles, and I decided I was going to go on a program to increase muscle mass. So I did that. I worked two or three times a week with a trainer focusing on building muscle mass. And I have to say, Mitch, I was able to really get a nice cut in my biceps and triceps. And my arms used to be kind of, you know, they call them bat wings in Australia. And it's gone. It's gone. So, you know, I want to inspire everyone to understand how it's possible to resculpt our body at any age.
And it's important, too, both for men and women. We tend to look for osteoporosis in women, not in men, but men develop it also as they age. And you can take all the calcium, all the magnesium you're supposed to. You're still going to start losing bone mass if you're not doing weight-bearing exercise. So it's not just muscle mass. It's also bone mass. It's absolutely critical at least three times a week for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and also increasing those mitochondria, those little energy batteries in the body.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's very important when you talk about mitochondria as far as aging, especially a lot of people worry about becoming forgetful. Once they hit 45 or 50, they forget names, they forget where they're putting their car keys, things like that. And you start damaging the mitochondria in your brain with a lot of the inflammatory things we've talked about. You can combat that with nutrition as well. One, by putting nutrients in your body that are going to promote something called mitochondrial biogenesis. You can grow new mitochondria in your brain and new brain cells well into your 90s. Most people think that stops when you're 15 or 20. It doesn't. But you've got to put the right foods in your body. Pyroquinolone, or PQQ, is very important for mitochondrial biogenesis. A lot of people haven't heard of that, but it's very important. Also, avocado is a great anti-aging nutrient because inflammation in the brain makes us depressed, it makes us forgetful, it makes us lose brain cells. And so avocado is rich in very healthy monounsaturated fats, similar to what you're going to find in olive oil. It has 4 grams of protein, more than most fruits, and 11 grams of fiber, and it promotes a normal body weight. It reduces appetite. It's been found if you have a little avocado, like a half with lunch, you're going to be less hungry the rest of the afternoon. And also beets are very, very good for detoxification, helping with aging. They contain betanins and nutrients called betalins. They upregulate detoxifying enzymes. They decrease cyclooxygenase 2, which promotes inflammation. And they've been found to lower CRP, which is C-reactive protein. That's an indication of inflammation in the body.
Yeah, that's so exciting. I get so excited when I hear you say this. You know, I was interviewing a researcher who did a study out of Australia that showed he's a psychologist, and he was looking at depression, and he was able to reduce depression in this cohort of people when he gave them curcumin. So it's the turmeric, the active ingredient of turmeric, and it was directly connected to reducing inflammation in the body, reduced depression.
Oh, there is such a huge depression link. A lot of recent research has shown that the microbes you have in your gut are profoundly linked to depression. So they found that just taking a probiotic every day with either lactobacillus, acidophilus, or bifidobacillus also helps reduce depression by decreasing inflammation in the brain.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Okay, what about heart disease?
Heart disease, again, is a lot of, there's a lot of misinformation about heart disease. So everybody used to think heart disease is what I was taught in medical school. Heart disease is caused by high cholesterol. Well, it's not. Heart disease is controlled and contributed to by too much inflammation caused by too much white sugar, white flour, heat-damaged oils. These both damage the vessel walls that supply the heart and supply the brain. Once you have the damaged vessel walls, it then can make your cholesterol, the worst types, more sticky. It binds to these damaged vessel walls and starts to block them. So you want to put things in your body. First, don't put in the white sugar and the white flour. Chia seeds are great anti-inflammatories. They can be added to smoothies. They can be added to cereal. They can be added to your favorite juices. They're rich in omega-3 fatty acids. In fact, chia seeds have 8 times more omega-3s than salmon does and 7 times more vitamin C than oranges. So these are great foods to continue. Papaya, both the fruit and the leaf, they contain digestive enzymes that decrease inflammation, and they have fiber that actually lowers the worst type of cholesterol called LDL by inhibiting its absorption. It's also very rich in folic acid, which lowers homocysteine, which in turn decreases blood vessel damage. And people shouldn't forget about saffron. Saffron contains a nutrient called crocin that decreases damaged LDL, which sticks to your blood vessel walls and creates plaque, and it improves insulin sensitivity, so it's a great way of decreasing your appetite.
Saffron's very expensive, though, isn't it? I mean, I bought saffron, and you just use little small amounts. It'll,
but it's expensive, you know, when you buy a lot. But when you think of how little you need to use,
right.
Both in cooking or to make some saffron tea, and saffron also has been linked with a decreased in decreases in depression. There's a huge literature on that.
Yeah, saffron's becoming much more appreciated in our culture now. Of course, it's been used traditionally in places like India for a long time.
And Persia.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cancer. What do we need to know?
The main things for a cancer prevention diet are, let's say, the cruciferous vegetables would probably come first, both for men and for women, both for detoxifying, getting rid of carcinogens, and because they contain indole-3 carbinol. Indole-3 carbinol changes the estrogens in a woman's body from the type that promote breast, ovarian, and uterine cancer, change them to the type that protect against those three cancers. It also inhibits prostate cancer in men. The bark of the magnolia tree, contains honokiol and manganol. These are two things that induce apoptosis, or normal cell death, in cancer cells. So apoptosis is very important because the difference between a normal cell and a cancer cell is a cancer cell just keeps dividing. It becomes immortal. You want to shift that condition back to dormancy. So the active cancer cell back to being dormant. Magnolia bark is one of the key ways of doing that. Also, black raspberries. Now, they're not always in season. You can buy black raspberry powder. It's great in yogurt and juices, even in water. Black raspberry powder has been found to turn on about 200 different tumor suppressor genes, and also rosemary. Rosemary is part of the mint family, and it contains nutrients also that induce apoptosis, and it prevents carcinogen-induced changes in the DNA that turns on tumor suppressor genes. Also, while we're talking about rosemary, it's also good for weight loss because it's able to overcome insulin resistance, and it enhances leptin sensitivity.
And I think we have to mention that when we talk about these tumor suppressor genes, we're talking about the genes that have been kind of defined as this, the BRCA1, BRCA2, the breast cancer gene, which isn't really a gene. It's just what they chose to name some isolated tumor suppressor genes, correct?
There are tumor suppressor genes that are important in DNA repair, but it's also important, like you said, to remember only 5-8% of all the breast cancer in the country is because of BRCA mutation. That means 92-95% of all the breast cancer in the country is environmentally caused, and there's a lot you can do to influence your chances of that.
And even if you have this BRCA1, BRCA2, your recommendations on the diet that's going to upregulate this tumor suppressor gene is critical.
Absolutely. It is important regardless, because you have to remember, even with the BRCA gene, you're still at an increased risk for colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, stomach cancer, and so you're not going to be taking out your pancreas, so it is important to pay attention to those things.
Right. You know, there's one thing that I just wanted to discuss with you. When I am looking at the detoxification pathways, the genes in phase one, phase two, with the liver has two phases, people may not know that, but I see a lot, 95% of the people I test have impaired genes of effectively working with the detoxification process in the body, and particularly related to the detoxification, proper metabolic breakdown of estrogens. So this, and I'm sure you know you're aware that you know CYB1B1 and the glutathione genes. I'd like your thoughts on this. I'm really concerned of this widespread use of hormones, even bioidentical hormones and the pill, in women who show this genomic tendency to be inefficient in properly breaking down and metabolizing estrogen into the weak form and therefore turning it into a more dangerous reactive form that can increase the risk of breast cancer.
Well, I think, again, the more of this type of testing that we're going to be doing is going to provide information on that. One thing that's critical when we're talking about breast cancer is everybody needs to also know their 25-hydroxyvitamin D level. That's the metabolite of D3. And if you eat a perfect diet for D3, the most you can get is about 350 units a day. So that would be things like cottage cheese and salmon and yogurt. But D3, the women with the lowest D3 levels have the highest risk of developing breast cancer. Women who have breast cancer that have the lowest D3 levels when they're diagnosed have a 90% increased incidence of developing metastatic disease. So it's very important everyone knows their D3 level, because that is important in your risk of developing pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, and colon cancer. Many people need at least 1,000 units a day, which you're only going to get with a supplement. Some people need up to 5,000 units a day, some more, but you don't need to guess. You need to know your levels. So it gets back to the same thing about knowing your detoxification pathways. There are a lot of things you need to know. You need to know your hemoglobin A1C. In the back of the gene therapy plan, I have a lot of these key tests people need to ask their doctors to do if they're not being done already.
Do you know, I have more and more people reporting back that the vitamin D test is no longer included in your basic blood workup because it is assumed that everyone is low in vitamin D, so why bother testing, which is such an insane approach, because we must know our vitamin D levels so we can target the optimal range of vitamin D. A lot of people aren't going to get it, even if they are taking vitamin D for a variety of reasons, and you never know where you're at.
And we all absorb it differently. So, for instance, I'm a very poor absorber of vitamin D. The least I can take to keep my level decent is 5,000 units a day. For you or somebody else, it might be 1,000, depending on where you live. Also, I live in New York City, so in New York at this latitude, we aren't making any vitamin D between November and April just because of the way the sun exposure is. So there are a lot of factors, how well you absorb it, where you're living, that has to do with it. You have to know your level.
Yeah, it's so important. And then go for that optimal end of that reference range, the high end, not just
yes.
Be happy in between. Okay, what about diabetes? What do we need to know about how to work with our genes to reduce our risk?
It's key, and there is so much people can do. Again, this is one of the ones that people tend to just throw up their hands and assume that if they have a family history of it, they're going to get it. Nothing could be further from the truth. So one of the best things you can put in your body for diabetes, and this has to do of taking care of three main hormones, insulin, which we know. You want to keep your insulin sensitivity good, because that means you'll make less insulin, you'll be less likely to get hypoglycemic. Leptin, which is what makes you feel full, so you want to keep your body sensitive to leptin. And adiponectin, so your body's making not too many fat cells. Cinnamon is great. It's best to buy it organic. It improves insulin sensitivity. It also improves glucose transport in the cells so that it can be burned. It also decreases inflammation in the body because inflammation induces insulin resistance. So people that ingest just 3 grams of cinnamon after meals, they'll increase something called GLP-1, which will slow how rapidly your stomach empties. It'll make you feel fuller longer, and that's why it's been found to be a great weight loss aid. Something very few people think of for diabetes is radishes. Radishes are loaded with chemicals called triterpenoids. They'll inhibit a chemical called PTP1B. That improves insulin sensitivity, and it also improves less leptin sensitivity, so you're going to have less hunger. So a trick that I talk about in the gene therapy plan is that you can, after you eat, have some sliced radishes, some sliced celery stalks, or some sliced carrots, or have a salad with just vinegar and oil instead of dessert. You will do a lot to get a lot of enzymes in your body and chemicals that are going to leave you feeling fuller longer. Also, take a probiotic. Probiotics are one of the most important things in protecting yourself against diabetes. I recommend one with at least a billion colony-forming units per pill, or consume fermented foods like sauerkraut, miso, yogurt, preferably Greek yogurt with no added sugar and cultures added to it, and then whole grains like spelt and barley. They're broken down into short-chain fatty acids in the gut. They'll support a big part of your immune system's in your gut. It's called GALT, or gut-associated lymphoid tissue. It'll also decrease inflammation that promotes insulin resistance.
There you go, a new definition of dessert.
Yes.
Have your sliced radishes, celery, stalks, a little vinegar. But it's worth experimenting with this, isn't it? Because you can see some real changes and results if you do.
You do see real changes, and it's so rewarding just to see the results in people. People can't believe how simple this is, and yet how effective it is, and how much better they feel every day of their life. I mean, this will help you live longer. But what's the point of living into your 80s or 90s if you're having difficulty walking, if your joints hurt, if you can't remember things? You can be vibrant well into your 80s and 90s if you start taking care of your genes beginning in your 40s and your 50s or even earlier.
Well, I am a firm believer of incorporating everything you're talking about so I can die healthy, which is one of my goals. You know, it's a great thing to think that you can just go to sleep one day and, you know, and the next day you're off somewhere else and not have any serious debilitating illnesses. And I think we all need to entertain that thought.
Yes, and it's possible.
And it is possible. So that leads us to talking about how we can support healthy aging.
Yes, well, aging healthy, the reason people don't age, you know, people will associate getting old with aging. They are not the same. Aging is inevitable. Getting old is optional. And what I mean by that is if you're putting a lot of things in your body that's going to cause your joints to hurt, your weight to go up, for you to become diabetic, forgetful in your old age, you know, that is not the goal. And so there are great things you can do to decrease something called AGEs, or advanced glycation end products. And these are, again, the white sugars, the white flours, the things that are going to end up damaging brain cells. And so your protection against those things are going to be things like kale. Kale is best steamed. It's loaded with fiber. It decreases insulin levels, and it's loaded with omega-3s. Just 100 calories of kale will have 350 milligrams of what's called alpha-linolenic acid, which is an omega-3. The other thing, great brain food, is turmeric. Turmeric decreases inflammation in the brain. Parsley is loaded with nutrients that will decrease inflammation. Scallions, allium vegetables, they are loaded with sulfides, and they help regenerate glutathione. Glutathione is found in every cell in the body. Dropping glutathione levels after you're 35 is one of the leading reasons people age, so you want to take good care of the glutathione levels.
Yes, wow, this is such great information. So if you were to make a recommendation of the top foods or spices that you think we should all be eating on a fairly regular basis, what would they be?
My top three would be green tea and black tea. They're loaded with phenols and polyphenols. They're going to affect literally everything that we have just talked about. I love acai berry and black raspberry. They're loaded with resveratrol and ellagic acid. And the third top thing would be olive oil. Mainly not cooked, poured over raw food. Those would be the three top things, but there are so many more in the balance and how you prepare things that, you know, I talk about in the gene therapy plan.
And I think when we talk about olive oil, you must really prefer people get the organic virgin olive oil.
Yeah, right? The organic extra virgin, that's a place where you want to spend a little bit of extra money to get the best.
Yeah. I noticed in some of your recipes you have people taking green tea that's already been brewed, and then they just add that as the liquid into their smoothie, so it's not so much water you're taking, but it's the green tea.
That's right. And, you know, there's even matcha, which is one type of green tea. You can even get the matcha powder, and you can use that as a green tea to make everything from, you know, put it in yogurt to different types of desserts and baked goods.
Right. So you talk about incorporating not just the raw foods, live foods, but also you are a fan of using some of these powders as well, like the, I guess, the acai powder, the black raspberry powder, some of the other...
Coconut milk powder, I love.
Yeah.
It's very rich.
Yeah, talk about coconut milk powder, because I don't think people know that one very much.
Yeah, but it's loaded with lauric acid. In fact, lauric acid is so important for your immune system, for weight loss. Thailand is the largest coconut-consuming country in the world. They have the number one lowest risk of breast cancer. So coconut's not something that may be the easiest thing for people to go out and eat the fruit or drink the milk, but you can buy good organic coconut milk powder and mix it in a lot of the recipes that I have for juices, smoothies, things like that.
Great. Well, gosh, Mitch, this is so exciting. You have just put together an amazing amount of information in your latest book, which is The Gene Therapy Plan. Is there anything else you want to touch upon that we haven't really had a chance to discuss?
Well, if people would like any more information, I do have a website to go with the book, and it's called Gene Changer, GeneChanger.com. And there's a free newsletter people can sign up for. There are free juicing regimens. free recipes, meal plans, a lot of the latest scientific literature in this. So that's been very helpful and well received.
So it really is learning how to incorporate these critical foods that alter our genes. It's making some of the alterations in our diet. I like to say we can upgrade our diet. And, you know, I think your message is so powerful, and that is that people can take control of their genes and they can alter their genetic destiny. By the way, the one last question I have before we come to the end of the show, we know that when we compromise our gene expression through toxic foods, a toxic environment, it can alter future generations. Does it go the other way around, Mitch? Can we improve future generations by altering our diet and improving gene expression?
It does go the other way around, and we can absolutely do very positive things for future generations as well. That's a good question.
You know, I think that is such a hopeful message right there, because we know that from the statistics we're getting more and more compromised, our genes are being altered. But if we get proactive, if we take the advice that you're giving us in your book and on your website, we cannot just reverse our own health challenges, but we can, if we're still young enough to have children, alter the destiny of future generations. Very powerful, very profound.
Well, you know, that's the whole message. It's what I've been doing for 25 years. You know, I was very fortunate to be at Cornell, to do my training there, to do research in nutrient-gene interactions and a lot of these things at Cornell and at Rockefeller. So, you know, it's about getting this in a practical level out to the world.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mitch Gaynor, for being with us today. Appreciate the time. I know you're really busy. Your book is going to be a bestseller, no doubt. And I just really am very grateful for the wonderful work and research you have done and taking time with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me back anytime, Cheryl.
Yes, you are such a treasure. Thank you, Mitch, so much.
Thank you.
And for all of those listening, I hope you really enjoyed our show today. It's profound information, and you can take action today to make a difference on how you express your genes, which is the greatest gift we have for ourselves and for future generations. So until next time, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.